Hey there, and welcome to the Confident Woman Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Brooks. Join me as I sit down and chat with co-hosts, friends, and carefully curated guests and talk about all the things that empower you to become your best and most confident self. So let's get started. All right, ladies, welcome back. So today we have with us Jessica Balladad, and Jessica is a 5-year cancer survivor, and she is also the creator of Feel for Your Life, a free mobile application that provides resources on how to perform self-breast exams and when to get screenings while allowing users to track and monitor their changes and set reminders. So, of course, you know, these are such important conversations that I think we really need to unpack and have these conversations, especially when it comes to how do we take care of ourselves, and especially as we get older and things are changing and, you know, we kind of have to tune in to what is going on internally. So Jessica, I would love for you to share a little bit more about what, you know, obviously being a breast cancer survivor and the works that you do are so needed, but let's talk about kind of your mission into the works that you do as well.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having me. You know, it was last year I asked my Instagram audience and my audience on Facebook, I said, what did you grow up learning about your breasts? And I got a bunch of like, nothing, not much. And I don't remember anything about it. And even though I was getting all of these answers from women who were telling me like they hadn't learned anything, or they just basically learned as they went along, you know, developing and growing up, what I saw in that is that there are really three things women learn. Like, we have breasts, they have a function. We eventually learn that and figure it out. And in the South especially, let's keep them covered up, you know? So it creates this narrative of shame that I learned prevents women from getting the care and having those candid conversations sometimes for taking care of themselves. So that is part of the foundation of, you know, Feel for Your Life. When I was 18 years old, I accidentally found a lump in my breast while I was in the shower. I was getting ready to start my freshman year in college, and I didn't know what to do. I freaked out. I was raised by my dad. I can't tell my dad I'm having breast problems. So I called my best friend, and these were the days, but Google was definitely around. This is 2003, but you really didn't use it as Dr. Google. So we just basically had to lead through our anxiety of what was going on with our bodies. And I eventually stumbled my way into a gynecologist's office. I had no idea what that was at all, but I was terrified. And I was misdiagnosed. She said it was a cyst and it would go away with my menstrual cycle. Had my menstrual cycle, I noticed it. I thought it got smaller, but it didn't go away. And I just kept an eye on it for months at a time. Then I'm a freshman at my college. I'm walking to class and I'm having pain in my breast. I run to the bathroom. I check myself out, and this lump, this mass is pretty prominent. So I went to health services on campus. They referred me for a screening, and that screening revealed that I had a solid mass rather than a cyst. So here I was 18, wondering if I was too old for breast cancer. And then I had to go back to the OG of Google. I went to a Barnes & Noble to look up, you know, stories and anything I could find out about breasts. And just like, what is going on? And I learned about something called a fibroadenoma. Sure enough, I am, you know, I go through the doctors and whatnot. They're checking this out and they're like, it's growing. It's causing you discomfort. You should probably have a lumpectomy, meaning I need to have it removed. And I'm like, oh my God, okay. It was removed. Everything was, you know, checked out okay. It was benign. And it was that experience that got me into the habit of performing self-exams, having that lumpectomy at 18 years old. Fast forward 15 years later, I'm in the shower performing an intentional self-exam. I go over the right side, everything's okay. I go over the left side and I get to like the lower left side. It's called about the 3-4 o'clock position. If you were to think about your breast as a clock, with the 3-4 o'clock position, and I felt a lump that was eventually diagnosed as breast cancer. And it was then I knew I wanted to make self-exams, you know, well-known, comfortable for women, and, you know, accessible to do and to have the resources and the need to learn more about it right there, instead of, you know, having a woman scramble and Google herself to death now and going to her friends or people who may not have the right information for her in her most, you know, desperate time of need of facing a potential medical crisis. So that's my long way of saying of how I got to where I kind of am right now.
Wow. And grateful that you're here. I mean, this is just, you know, especially with breast cancer, it's such a place of uncertainty. And when you would ask that question to your audience, that made me question. I'm like, yeah, I mean, growing up, did we learn anything? No, we didn't. We learned in like, here's a tampon, here's a maxi pad, and you're probably going to have some blood between your legs when you have a period.
Exactly.
When you're like 8 to 10 years old, that was like our health ed. And I was like, I remember coming home and freaked out about that. I was like, Mom, what's going to happen? So to your point, it wasn't enough education. And I think it's almost like our generation coming up being advocates for women's health because it was so missed and it was just glazed over. But man, wow, what a story. It's just, you don't realize the magnitude of what we go through and knowing that there's something on the other side of it. And so you're advocate for obviously women's health and empowering women to really take those exams seriously. And what is self-care? That's something I think we see across social media. Self-care is in bubble baths and masks and, you know, Netflix and chill or something like that. But I know your holistic aspect of taking that deeper dive into what does self-care, and I'd love for you to explain what that means to you. I mean, I know that you shared your story, but where can our women start?
I think self-exams are self-care. I think it's being mindful of our bodies, understanding what's normal for us, having those conversations with, you know, other women that we trust and have relationships with. You know, let's talk about our breasts. Let's talk about our health. Let's talk about the things that bother us and, you know, take away some of that stigma. Because we, you know, we face a lot of shame with our bodies having this, oh, don't say those words. And we have, you know, crazy nicknames for our body parts. Some of them aren't, yeah, sure. Some of them are kind of funny. But, you know, we're not always saying breast and vagina and things like that. But just having those candid conversations and making it normal in the appropriate settings. I'm not saying you have to go shout those words on social media all the time or at all, if that's not your thing. But then that allows us to be more comfortable having those conversations with our medical providers. Start with the people that you are in safe relationships with so that you can have those more difficult, candid conversations with your medical provider. I think, you know, aside from, you know, the bubble baths and getting your nails done and your hair done, those are all awesome. Those are all great. You know, eat the cookie, drink the wine if you want to. But, you know, let's learn how to take care of ourselves as well.
Right. Yes. I mean, to your point, it's exactly, you know, I'm thinking back when I grew up, it's we had every name except what to call them. You know, in biology class, it's like breasts and vagina. It's we tiptoed around the words that it almost feels like we tiptoed around the subject, and the subject is taboo. So how do we even talk about those things? Right. It's
right.
How do you say, well, in your case, you know, growing up, being raised by your father, how do you say to your dad, I have issues going on with my breasts, because you didn't even address them as calling them breasts or understand that that was appropriate and acceptable? So we have to unlearn to learn. And I love that what your story is really empowering women to be that voice and the advocate, not only just for their own health, but the education that now we're helping to lead a next generation to fully understand what it means to be a woman. It's not just, you know, what we grew up. It's like girls had long hair, wear dresses. Boys had short hair and play in mud. It's like, it's not just so cut and dry. Yeah, I think just it's so important to really focus on your uniqueness and what makes you different, but also empowering yourself to really learn and educate yourself, because education was not available for us.
Absolutely. And, you know, being raised by my dad, one thing, fortunately, unfortunately, that made it a little bit more comfortable is that I'm the fourth generation on my dad's side of the family with breast cancer. I grew up with two aunts who had breast cancer and metastatic breast cancer. I had a grandmother with breast cancer. Six of her sisters and some of their children also had breast cancer. And my great grandmother had breast cancer. And we have no known gene mutation that's ever been found. So breast cancer has been part of my family my entire life. And so when I was diagnosed with the benign non-cancerous tumor at 18, I mean, it scared everybody because it's like, oh my God, has this really passed down to someone so young? Well, didn't get me at 18, but 33 is still pretty young. It is for breast cancer. And so we did have that. The oncologist who actually treated me had treated my aunt and my grandmother before me. So he had a vested interest in my care. And, you know, when he said, I want you to, you know, do these things, I did, you know, I agreed without hesitation with his treatment plan. I said, I want to go hard. Cancer runs in my family until it ran into me, and I'm going to put a stop to this. So that was my mindset going into it.
Wow. Yes, I didn't realize. I mean, when you say fourth generation, it's like, yeah, so every member of your family had kind of been a predecessor before. So I'm sure that did give you some hope that know that, you know, you're in good hands and you have an outlet where you can talk to other women that had gone through that. And then, of course, being in the same physician's care, which I'm sure is, you know, quite scary, especially at such a young, young age. I mean, you're 18. There's a lot of things going on. You just first year of college, first year on your own, first year of the... So this whole newness and this uncertainty, it's got to be dark and scary. But yet, I know before we hit record, you took that whole different approach and become more positive and reinforcing that so that it keeps that hope alive. Can we talk about the difference here between where we shift our mindset, because of the power of our mindset can really make or break us, especially during struggles and times of adversity, right?
Right. So I had seen what cancer had done in my family and what it was trying to do to me. I was losing an aunt at the time of my diagnosis. I missed her funeral. I, like, the aunts, the relatives before me, many of them had passed. And I thought, like, I felt alone in that. And like I said, cancer ran in my family until it ran into me. And I'm going to do something about this, not about this right now. So I just kind of got into this, like, all right, I'm going to break free from this diseased mindset. If this is where it stops, this is what I have to do. Like, I couldn't make it personal. I didn't want to say, you know, why is this happening to me? I couldn't focus on the why. Why is often like a gut issue. You don't, you know, it's not something that comes from your rational brain. When we go through something that scares us and that we want to start like pointing fingers when it starts to get uncomfortable, and it's like, I couldn't focus on that. I didn't want to focus on that. So I couldn't let it get personal. I couldn't blame my family lineage. I couldn't blame this, you know, being on birth control. You know, I was in the best shape of my life. I didn't drink. I didn't smoke. It didn't make sense, but I couldn't focus on the why. It was not helpful. I had to focus on what I had control of in that moment. And that was the decisions regarding my treatment plan. Even though, you know, here I am, I have this disease trying to take over my body, I could make decisions about what I could do for myself in the present. And so I couldn't let it get personal. Also, I didn't want it to be pervasive. I didn't want to start thinking that it was going to affect other parts of my life. Oh, well, what if I never outlive this? What if I don't have a future with my husband? What if I, you know, my parents, you know, outlive me and I don't have those experiences with them? What if I never get to do that? Like, I could not let that disease affect my future. I couldn't let it get pervasive in different parts of my life. And I refused. I wanted to see myself with a future outside of breast cancer where I knew that I could thrive. And it was up to me to decide how I was going to make that happen through my mindset.
Wow. That's powerful. It's a matter of how you view what is happening to you or for you.
Absolutely.
And yeah, it's powerful because you had a choice.
We mean
that way. And your story would be probably a lot different than it is today.
Right.
Because mind controls what we're focusing on, what we're saying about ourselves. anticipation of fear and worry and doubt and uncertainty and all the scary factors, because yes, those things are very real.
Yes.
I'm sure you felt all of those things. But you said, this must be the story. I want a different outcome. So for me to have a different outcome, I have to think differently. And so kind of walk us through, you know, some of the, obviously the mindset things, but, you know, kind of share a little bit more of that journey to overcoming. And obviously you've, this has been several years in the making, and where it has led to you today.
I am a big believer of feeling your feelings, and not in like the, not in the mushy gushy way, like feel your feelings, share, overshare, da da da. Yeah, those things have a time and place. But when we think about our feelings as tools, they become so much more powerful to us. So like anger, I say, is one of my favorite emotions or tools, rather, because of what it tells us. Not that I go around in a rage, you know, breaking things and yelling. That's actually not me at all. I like what anger tells us. Anger tells us that something is wrong and something needs to change. So what's wrong? I have cancer and I may feel like I'm out of control. And what needs to change? I don't want to have cancer. So what can I do for myself? You know, what's my treatment plan look like? What are the baby steps? You know, I had to think about what I'm in right now is temporary. And I'm choosing not to let this be my forever. This one day, one step at a time, what is going to get me closer to my end goal? And this goes for anyone who's even, you know, stage four, who may have metastatic disease that is terminal. It's in the mindset that you want to get into that, yes, there is the inevitable, but you have control of, you know, looking at what's wrong right now and what needs to change and where do I need to take responsibility for my role in this. I didn't cause cancer, but I have a role in what I can do for myself in that moment. A lot of people get really uncomfortable when you ask them to take responsibility because, again, that blame wants to like point fingers at other parts of our lives, and we want to stay stuck in that. Another thing, fear. I love fear. Not that I try to live in fear. Fear tells us, we think of it like fight, flight, freeze, but I think of it as make a plan, prepare, and seek help. Like tornado drills, or if you're on the West Coast, earthquake drills, fire drills. You make a plan for that. You practice your plan and you seek help where you need to. So you practice your fire drill. If it happens, you know, if it's a fire, you escape. You prepare that, you know, you practice, where are you going to exit? Where are you going to go? And then you seek help. Who either needs to teach you how to develop that plan, or who are you going to call in the event there's a fire? Plan, prepare, seek help. Like when you're doing your self-exams, what I help women do to get over that fear. It's like, what if I find something? I say, well, all right, that's totally a possibility. And we assume that every time that we find a lump in our breast, it's automatically cancer. Statistics have shown us, science shows us, that actually 80% of lumps in the breast end up being benign. So you have a chance that just because you find a lump, it doesn't automatically mean cancer, but definitely talk to your doctor, call your doctor about that right away. So, all right, you're in the shower, you're doing a self-exam and you find something and you have that, oh, crap moment in that time. So it's like, all right, what is your plan? What are you going to do for yourself if you find a lump? First, you have your self-exam plan, because let's say you've downloaded the Feel for Your Life app and you're keeping track of your self-exams. You have a self-exam plan. Now, let's prepare the plan. All right, who's a person that you're going to call? What are you going to do for yourself? How are you going to evaluate that lump? You know, do you have a friend? Do you have a doctor that you're going to call, you know, when you need to take that next step? And that is to seek help. You seek help whenever you need to, like, all right, this obviously needs to be addressed. I'm going to tell you, don't Google yourself. I'm actually guilty of not following my own advice, but I'm going to tell you, Google lump in your breast, cancer is going to come up and it's not helpful and it's going to scare the crap out of you. But or it could go in the other direction. You could Google things because you have this bias, like, oh, there's no way it could be cancer. I'm going to Google other breast lumps. Well, that may not be helpful to you in case it is something that is malignant. So plan, prepare, seek help, stay off of Google. So I love thinking about fear and anger as tools for us. I could go through a list of them, but I would say those are my two favorites.
I love that perspective. I'd never heard that before.
Oh, okay, cool.
I love that you share this because so many of us are fueled by the anger, fueled by the fear, but you chose to say, yes, it's going to fuel me, but in a way that's empowering because this is just a tool in this tool belt. It's not defining me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
I love that. And then, of course, your plan, prepare, and seek help. So you talked about self-exams.
Right.
Many of our listeners probably grew up in the same area that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of walk us or guide us through what does that even look like other than just feeling around in the shower and you're like, I don't know what I'm looking for. I don't even know what. Can we unpack that? Can we give you like a health 101?
Right. It's so interesting that, you know, you brought all of this up because when I was going through chemotherapy, I asked my friends, or I'm sorry, they asked me, how did I even know to get diagnosed with cancer? And I said, I do my self exams every month. Don't you? And it was crickets.
It's
like, okay, this is a problem. And this is part of, you know, another part of the layer of foundation here that, you know, prompted me to create Feel for Your Life. But three reasons women were not doing self-exams.
They didn't know how.
They had never learned how because, again, what do we learn about our breasts growing up?
Essentially nothing.
You know, according to the, you know, the small cohort of people I've spoken with.
So we don't learn how. We are afraid of finding something.
Many of my friends were uninsured or underinsured, and they just didn't know if, how expensive is this? Do I even have time to deal with this? I don't even want to know.
If I'm not looking for it and I don't feel for anything, everything's fine. Kind of out of sight, out of mind. Not a good idea, but that was the reality. And number three, they felt ashamed of touching themselves.
They felt ashamed of looking at their naked bodies in the shower, in the mirror. They just had body image issues as a result of what, of many things, you know, trauma and their perception of, and what formed that perception of themselves. And I thought, wow, this is a bigger issue than just telling women how to do self-exams. But I'm going to walk you through how I do mine. The best self-exam is the one that you talk about with your medical provider. And there are different ways. You can do it in the shower. You can look in the mirror. And then you can lay in your bed. I actually do all three. So what it does when it starts with me, I look in the mirror before taking a shower. I'm looking for any changes. I'm looking for any like physical differences in either side. If you see something that's not uniform, meaning if it's like a lump, an indentation, if you have any discharge from your nipples, any bleeding from your nipples, you want to take note of those things. If you're trying to think, oh, any puckering, any, it's like an orange peel feeling. If you notice that there are different texture differences on both sides of your breast, that is something to be mindful. I would say if you personally, I've heard a little bit about this. If you have itching that goes on for longer than a week, I would say in a certain area, definitely get that checked out by your doctor. That could be a few things, but itching could also present some issues that could lead to potentially a malignancy. I don't want to say just because your boobs itch, that's cancer, but you know, it's a change and it's different. If it's consistent, say something about it. So you're looking at yourself. Do they both look the same? Does everything look normal to what you recognize as normal?
And then in the shower, I love getting in the shower.
Oh, that sounded funny. I love doing my self-exams in the shower. Not that I do them every day. It is once a month, but
the shower is where I can be vulnerable with myself. And that is my me time. I have thinking showers I take, but I'm digressing a little bit.
I put, you know, when I'm doing the side that I'm examining, I put one hand up over my head with my elbow kind of in that 180 degree angle. And I start at the top of my breast in the 12 o'clock position. If you're thinking about your breast as a clock, and I just go around my breast in a clockwise position. I am massaging. I am using the pads of my fingers, two or three fingers, and I am getting deep in there. I'm essentially massaging my breast, checking for lumps. I remember when I found the cancer, I got to the 12 o'clock. I'm going around. It was at 3-4 o'clock position. I will never forget what the cancer felt like. It was firm, it was dense, and I could wiggle it a little bit like a kernel of corn on the cob, but it would not move. When I had the benign tumor in my right breast around 6 o'clock, that tumor, like, it would ping pong between my fingers. It was very mobile in my breast. So the cancerous lump for me did not move around much, but the benign tumor would roll around like a grape or a marble inside my breast. So that's what it was for me. I go around my entire breast. I massage throughout my breast. There are instructions inside of the Feel for Your Life app that can tell you how to move your hand and your fingers. And then after that, getting out of the shower, drying off, I lay down. I put my arms up over my head one at a time, based on the breast that I'm examining. And I'm doing the same thing, the same massage motion in a clockwise position and across throughout my entire breast using the pads of my fingers, because that different angle can often, it may present lumps, bumps, and abnormalities in a different way for you that you may not have felt in the shower. It's just a way to be more thorough. So those are how I do my self-exams once a month. Whenever I had a menstrual cycle, for me, I would do my self-exams on my last day of my menstrual cycle. And now that I don't have a menstrual cycle, I just pick the same time every month.
Wow. Thank you for those tips. And as you're sharing them, I'm thinking, yeah, that's easy to do, right? For those people who are like, oh, I don't even know how to. Listen, she gave us perfect examples. But it was, as you're sharing that, I'm thinking, man, that could be scary if you do find something. And, you know, how do you... Let's say you do find something, before we are quick to assume and make assumptions and turn to our Google or Chat GPT, is there a waiting period or a time that we would think, okay, give it another few days, another week? Is it another month just to kind of monitor? Or how quickly should we seek medical advice?
Personally, if it were me, I would seek medical advice right away. This that you can take care of it, the better. In my experience, when you call your medical provider and say, I have a lump in my breast, they will make time for you. You generally get moved to the front of the line. They're like, can you be here, you know, tomorrow? Very rarely have I seen someone get put off, but I'm like, call a different doctor. Like, someone will see you and someone will talk to you about this right away. So I would say don't delay, because I think the longer that you wait, you start to talk yourself out of it. You start to, like, that fear just, like, subsides, like that urgent fear that comes up for you. You start to let it subside, and then you let yourself get busy, and then you let life kind of take over. So I would say right away, if you notice anything, do tell your medical provider about it right away.
Okay. Good advice there. I know for me, when I had a certain age where you go get your mammograms, and I remember getting a call back on one end, and I freaked out because I was like, oh my gosh, why would they be calling me back about my medical? They only call you if something's wrong. And so thank God it wasn't anything more serious than what it was, but they had said the density of your breast during the menstrual periods and times of the calendar month. And you had talked about picking a day that works best for you with whether you have menstruation or not, and then sticking to that so you can now have a measurement to base off of every month. But anyway, that, yeah, scared the bejesus out of me. I was like, oh my goodness, because nobody wants to hear that call back.
Right.
But there's so many different factors that can go into it. For context, my was, I guess, denser tissue because of the time of month, and they couldn't pick that up on the scan, so they had to call me back in for an ultrasound.
Yeah.
For my testing.
Yeah, what's interesting, like in the month of September, this went into effect September 10th, the FDA is requiring your mammogram provider to tell you about your breast density so that you may be at an increased risk, or you may need supplemental screenings like an MRI or an ultrasound. And if you know that ahead of your appointment, you know, on the day of your mammogram, instead of getting that scary phone call, you can talk to the technician or the radiologist there and say, hey, I know I have dense breast tissue. I am due for my mammogram. Would I also need an ultrasound, or can I go ahead and just get an ultrasound during this visit to check myself out? So I'm really glad that they notified you. It's scary. No one likes those phone calls. I totally get what that's like and how it can feel, but
These new regulations that went into effect are teaching women to be mindful of their breast density and what that means and how it can hide lumps, bumps, and abnormalities that could show up on imaging.
Good to know. Yeah, it was a freak out moment. But now I know going in that if anything were to pick up, I actually make that note and say, hey, listen, I would call back several years ago. And this is so it gets me that peace of mind. So also, as the technicians reading that, they're well informed and they give me that peace of mind. Says, hey, listen, nothing to worry about. So it's just, again, communication, I think, and then being honest and asking questions and not having to be afraid to tiptoe on topics that we weren't taught about or was too taboo, or we just didn't have the vocabulary or education to be like, what's going on? So great information. And I was going to ask too at the time, but you would answer that about times of the month when to best pick it, because as you go through seasons of menstruation or not, if you're on an IUD or if you're older or whatever, there's so many different circumstances and situations that everyone's unique and different. So again, picking that time of day, that would be something you can always go back to, right?
That's just about.
Okay. Cool. And so talk to me about your app. I know you talked about it, but let's dive in a little bit. Like, tell our listeners what it's about, what they could find in there, how they could find it, and the tools that how it's helping them be more aware so you can be your own best advocate for women's health.
Sure. Yeah. You know, when I created the app, it was in the middle of the pandemic. Women were missing their screening appointments and they were getting diagnosed at later stages. And I thought, I'm going to do something about this. Either the world's going to end, which we didn't know at that time.
Either we're going to
end. Or this could be mildly successful. And by mildly successful, I thought like my friends and family would download it and golf clap for me. Oh, that's so cute. Jessica has her little app. Well, it ended up going viral because it was a much needed resource. And because women were missing. Now, self-exams do not replace screenings. It's just an alternative that I created so that women felt like they were in some sort of control in a time when we had no idea what was going to happen. And that was part of the basis of why I created it, and just expanding on that education of self-exams and personal advocacy. You know, when I built it, I wanted it to be something that it was accessible, that women could really engage with more than just once a month, that they could go in and review and look at articles and look at resources for themselves and, you know, learn about how to speak up at their doctor's office. So Feel for Your Life, it shows you how to do a self-exam. It lets you track and monitor your progress. So as you're doing a self-exam, it's going to ask you a series of questions and have you log that. You know, what are you looking for? Does anything seem different? Are you on your menstrual cycle? When was your last menstrual cycle? It lets you take notes that you can, you know, make note of in the app. And then you can set a monthly reminder that it can be the same time of month, like, oh, hey, you know, I'm going to set this reminder so I don't forget. This is the day I'm scheduled to be off of my menstrual cycle. I'm going to set that for this time of the month. So then as AI just started getting more and more popular, I dove into that and taught myself how to develop the tool that would allow me to create like sort of like your breast friend. It's called Breast Friend AI.
Oh, it's
So I'm like, I want to build the tool and that I wish I had before and during my diagnosis, because what you get on Google and you're Googling things and phrases. And I'm like, let's make it a little more refined. Let's have it talk to you with empathy, ask you follow-up questions. So I created Breast Friend AI. And my favorite functionality in it is that it can take your pathology reports from mammograms, any sort of screening, even a surgery, your lab reports, and it can translate all that crazy medical jargon into terms that you understand and then automatically populate questions to ask your doctor based on your specific pathology so that you can understand your results better and understand your body and ask the questions you may not have thought about before. So it's really like an advocacy, you know, breast friend tool for you. If you're going to go get a mammogram, you can ask it to create a hype like playlist for you to like help you with your nerves or whatever you're feeling in that moment. It can help you get second opinions. It can show you where screening facilities are. If you don't have insurance, you know, it'll ask you when you're asking the question, like, do you have insurance? Do you need other resources? It'll tell you like where you can go that may be free or low cost or options for you. You know, I wanted to make it, you know, comprehensive. Like I thought about my experience. I thought about the experience of women, and I just put my whole heart into creating that.
Wow. That's completely helpful. I mean, everything you're sharing, I'm thinking, man, I so needed that for me back then. We didn't even have internet. We had to go to the public libraries to find things.
Right. Yeah. Like I said, I was in Barnes and Noble, like looking up fibroadenomas and, you know, different wrong with breasts, because you just really didn't, I didn't think to use Google back then for that stuff.
Don't think of it. And, you know, once the internet came out, that became your replacement for doctors, and it would scare the bejesus out of you, because the next thing you know, it's like you get a hangnail and all of a sudden you got to have your foot amputated. It's like anything you go to, it's scary. It's a very scary place to be, especially when something so scary happens to you, because this is, you know, like what is going on? And of course, you know, our minds can go to the worry places and the fear and the anger, as Jessica shared, but leveraging that as your tool that says, yes, I can be angry. Yes, I can be fearful. Yes, I can be scared. But what is it here to teach me? What can I do today that can empower me to at least navigate this with a clear mind and, you know, set myself up for whatever might be and without going into that doom and gloom? So your app, I mean, gosh, people, go download this. Like, seriously, this is a lifesaver and a life changer, because having this knowledge, as we know, knowledge is power. So while we're informed and we have the information ahead of us, we're advocating for our own health and wellness, but we also become then advocates for other women who don't know about these things, don't know how to address, don't know how to communicate with their doctors and ask those questions. And I love that you brought in the AI feature, because it's almost anticipating questions that we wouldn't even know, because we didn't even know that we had something to even talk about. It's a whole different thing.
Yeah. And it's important for me to keep this free. Feel for Your Life is free. It's on the Google Play Store. It's in the App Store and at feelforyourlife.com. And so, like I said, accessibility is so important to me. So I work really hard to keep it as free as possible.
That's incredible. This has just been your mission-driven work, obviously, through something that you saw a need for in your own life and said, if I needed this for me and I can help somebody else, that I'm going to do that. And I think that that's a beautiful testimony to what it means to overcome. And, you know, challenges aside, this is what competent women do. It's about giving back and helping somebody else who needed something that you had to go through. You're just being a light for somebody else and helping to bridge that gap from where you're at today to where you could be, giving them that hope and inspiration. So I love that you share that. And of course, you know, as your own journey unfolds and you had to go through, gosh, I mean, I can't imagine what you went through, especially at such a young age, and then having to kind of feel like you're going backwards in time to go forward. Can we talk briefly about what your healing journey looked like in this? I know that we kind of skipped ahead for a moment, but I really wanted to talk about the app and unpack that and some of the self-examinations, because as you're navigating, I want to talk about the personal side for a moment. What did that feel like and look like for you in your healing journey?
I mean, the literal healing journey. Now, I rattle this off like it's just a laundry list because of just where I am. And it's crazy because people are like, whoa, 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 you went through what? And I'll have strangers give me hugs. Like when I'm like in different groups, or like, I'm like, oh, I didn't realize that's made people feel a certain way because I'm so beyond that. But my healing journey treatment plan, you know, aside from all the mindset, was, you know, I went through 16 rounds of chemotherapy. I had a double mastectomy. I went through 24 rounds of radiation. I did that from August 2018 to May of 2019. And then I took a break and I told my oncologist, I am tired of hospitals. I want a break, because he wanted to start like the hysterectomy pretty quickly after. I'm like,
no,
you can keep my ovaries asleep until I'm like, I need a break. I want to travel. I want to spend time with my family. It's 2019. And he's like, all right, you know, let's talk about when this is going to happen. Let's do December 2019. I'm like, fine. Okay. Well, the NFL heard about my story and they invited me to the Super Bowl.
And I thought,
by the time I have this surgery and go to the Super Bowl, I don't know if I'm going to be healed enough. So I postponed my hysterectomy into early 2020. I thought, that's a 2020 problem. That's fine. And here's the other thing. I also, because I had radiation and it destroyed and damaged my skin, part of the muscle, the tissue, my surgeon, my reconstruction surgeon said, hey, you need to wait at least a year before we go in and do reconstruction. I thought, fine, 2020 will be my year. No big deal. So I thought, 2020, hysterectomy, breast reconstruction, done. And I managed to have the hysterectomy on Valentine's Day of 2020. And COVID was sort of being talked about and being tiptoed around. I think it had just come into the United States publicly at that time, and people were sort of talking, but no one in the hospital was bringing it up. And I'm like, oh, this is fine. It's all fine. We're going to be fine. That all changed in March. I was turning 35, and I remember thinking, wow, I had shut down some bars in my 20s, but I'd never shut down like a whole state or country before, because that it was March 11th, everything shut down. And of course, no reconstruction for me. I had to wait until February of 2021 to have what's called deep flap reconstruction. They took fat tissue and blood vessels from my stomach and placed them into my chest to recreate my body. It was a 10-hour surgery with an 8-week full recovery period. It wasn't up to 8 weeks. No, it was 8 weeks of learning how to walk. When I say that, I had to walk hunched over and slowly make my way up into a 180-degree angle again to stand up straight. It took a full 8 weeks for me to do that, wearing binders, wearing, body suits, going to doctor's appointments to check the blood flow of everything. I wanted to use my body's own tissue. That was very important to me, because I had been through radiation and heard, I never want to discourage a woman who wants to get implants for whatever reason. That is her choice to make. But it was important to me to use my own body's tissue and go through that. So I sometimes will grab my chest and make jokes. I'm like, my stomach hurts. Because it's literally my stomach tissue. But it's crazy where science was. And I'm grateful for that. It was probably the most difficult part of everything for me, because I was fatigued. I had to stop, all of the supplements and things that I'd taken. I just felt like I had literally been hit by a few buses in that recovery period. But I'm grateful for what I'd been through. And yeah, I would do it all over again.
Wow. Your story is just so inspiring. And, when you talked about all the hurdles, man, it's just, I can't imagine just the months on end it would feel like the biggest run-on sentence in life. It's like after another, after another, after another. And it's like this opportunity has to be postponed for that thing and the next thing. And it's just that uncertainty. So kind of going back to, you have a choice what you're focusing on. You can easily go down that dark place, but you chose to look at it from a place of optimism and hope. And that, I think, is where life breeds in hope. It breeds in the light too. And so I love that. I mean, gosh, your story is just so empowering. Obviously, you've gone through some heavy, heavy stuff. And to come out of this with such a big heart and a big mission to give back and empower others, as you said, I would do it all over again.
Right.
Go ahead.
It had to happen for Feel for Your Life to happen. Like it had to. And I will say there were moments, like I'm not going to sit here and say it was all sunshine and rainbows. I had many nights of tears. There were moments of fears where I would go through paranoid binges and Google myself. Yes, I had to honor that part of it. Absolutely. So there's feeling the feelings, and then there's realizing it's a tool for you. So yeah, it wasn't an automatic mindset for me. I had to get uncomfortable and feel that discomfort to then be able to turn it. But I knew, the one thing that was intuitive to me is knowing I couldn't live in it. It was honoring the discomfort and then like, okay, I have this feeling. How is it helpful? How can this be helpful to me? I know that it can. So yeah, it's about deciding not to be stuck there.
Wow. So of course you've come full circle. And as we close out today's episode, you've already mentioned where we can find the app, but how can we find you? How can we connect with you? So I leave our listeners with ways to connect, and, you know, hopefully that'll open doors for connection, conversation, and just knowing that your work is inspiring them and giving them that hope and confidence as well.
Sure. Well, I'm super active on LinkedIn, Jessica Balladad. I'm not sure if there are very many Jessica Balladads on LinkedIn, but you can find me there. There's also a way to contact me at feelforyourlife.com. And then I'm on all the socials. You can find me at feelforyourlife, Facebook, Instagram, not really active on TikTok, or you can search Jessica.Balladad on Instagram as well. I'm pretty easy to find.
Awesome. And so my last question to you, since you have overcome so much, what is next?
Just like cancer is so unpredictable, I have an open mind to what could be next. Like, I've experimented with AI tools and creating devices that could possibly read mammogram images to help women get second opinions. I have experimented with creating a medical device that could look at breast density and predict a woman's risk for breast cancer. But right now, like, I'm working on other sponsorships for Feel for Your Life and just expanding its reach, doing work in Washington, D.C. with different advocacy groups to make healthcare accessible and affordable to them. Shout out to Patients Rising for empowering me through that. And just, you know, looking at where the problems are and how I can play a role in helping solve them.
Wow. Incredible. Jessica,
thank you.
Thank you for inspiring us, educating us, and empowering us to know that whatever life hands us, there's always something to look forward to know that we have that hope and you are the beacon. So thank you.
Thanks, Rachel. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Hey there. Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode of the Confident Woman Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode as much as I did, please be sure to like, subscribe, and leave us a review. Thanks again for listening.